Hello, I'm Elizabeth, an obsessive backyard gardener who might be able to offer you a couple of tips.
And I'm Keith, a landscape consultant, and I'm also passionate about gardening.
The one thing we both have in common is
muddy boots.
A self-sufficient and sustainable garden means less money spent, less resources used, more enjoyment for you, and better results for the environment. Today on Muddy Boots, we're going to provide you with strategies to help keep your garden happy and your bank balance healthy. Who doesn't love that? Keith?
Yes, I do.
Keith?
I do.
My first tip for saving money in the garden, and I think it might be yours as well, is to prepare your soil before doing anything else. The soil.
Exactly.
Am I right?
Yep.
Why?
Well, because it's the same as building a house.
Yeah.
All right, you don't just go out and build a house on dirt. You've got to put the foundations down first in order to make sure that everything above it is going to be successful. And the same thing applies to you in your garden if you're going to be putting any sorts of plants in. So the more preparation, the more amendments that you can put into your soil is going to give you the biggest return for the bang and the biggest bang for your buck.
Exactly. All right. So you might be spending a little bit of money to start with, but in the long term, you will be spending so much less because you're not going to be constantly buying fertilizers and, you know, things to try and amend whatever the problem is in your soil. Your plants will be bouncing with joy because they've got great soil for the roots below them, and so long-term joy, long-term happiness. Fantastic.
Just brilliant.
Okay. Now, I think most of us have either a compost bin or a worm farm in our gardens. Making our own compost reduces the amount of organic waste going to landfill, and using it in our garden adds valuable nutrients to the soil again, helping it to produce healthy plants and also help retain moisture. So that means less water is used, less water bill, less money spent.
And the best things you can add to your soil for that is compost.
Yeah.
Compost. And then, of course, we came across Vince from Clyde Compost, who's introduced us to lignite humate.
Correct.
Which is brown coal.
Yes.
And he told us that can hold up to 200% more moisture.
Which is amazing.
Which is just absolutely amazing. So if you imagine putting that sort of product into your soil, you know, you're already setting yourself up for so much success.
Yeah.
And then, of course, on top of that is your compost, which is an already readily available food for your plants.
Mm.
And then all you've got to do after that is to put a big, you know, big dose of mulch over the top, whether it be an organic mulch like pine bark, or even another organic mulch, which is like granitic sand, and then just a slight top up all, you know, after that with just some fertilizers, some organic fertilizer. That's all you need to do.
And mulching is a great way to hold moisture, prevent weeds.
Yep.
It's got some multiple benefits. And as you say, there are multiple types of mulch. What are the best ones that you would recommend?
Well, it depends on the client. You know, so we're talking. You're asking me a question on, you know, how I would address the client's needs. And therefore, the first thing I'd say is what do you like the look of?
Yeah.
What do you like the feel of? And that then gives me some ideas. So if someone wants to go with a bark mulch, then I would recommend a pine bark, and I'd recommend a fine pine bark, so something down to about 10 mil aggregate size.
Yeah.
Because that's not going to be robbing the soil as much of nitrogen as a bark mulch, like a red gum bark, or, you know, some of these other types of bark.
Because they're thicker? The bark is thicker?
The bark is from a different part of the tree.
Okay.
So eucalyptus mulch, for instance, is from the inner part of the actual tree, so the heartwood of the tree, whereas pine bark is from the outer side of the tree.
Oh.
So it's not in the same process of drawing the nitrogen out of the soil as the other is.
Okay. What sort of thickness, if you recommend a certain type of bark, what sort of thickness should that mulch be?
Well, I always sort of specify between 50 and 75 mil, whether it be a bark or whether we go for something like granitic sand.
Yeah.
Granitic sand is brilliant because moisture and air can still percolate down through it. It's like walking on beach sand, you know, the hard compacted beach sand, so it's a lovely surface to walk on.
Mm.
And it's also adding trace elements and minerals back into the soil. Not a lot, but some.
And you only have to put it on once,
You only have to do it once.
That is it. Yep. That is so good.
It is great.
So good. So you don't have to keep reapplying it, which you do with all the other mulches. So no. That I just love that, and that's why I'm getting it. So I'm very excited about that. Okay. My next tip is to plan ahead. Always plan ahead when making plans for the garden. So you take some time to plan your spring garden, for example, the season or two seasons beforehand. That way you know exactly what plants you need before heading to the nursery rather than getting down there and going, I think I like the look of that one and that one and that one. So you that can become quite expensive. So if you know exactly what you want, then you save money in that regard.
You do, and perhaps the best way to address that is to actually do a plan of your garden or get a plan of your garden drawn, because then you know exactly what you're setting yourself up for.
Yeah.
And if you do a small section of a garden, you can do it to scale, you can do it to a planned size. So great size is 1 to 100. So for every one centimetre, it equals 1 metre. Then you can work out how many plants are going to fit into that 1 metre area if they're small little perennial plants, or if they're a tree, you know how big a tree is going to cover that area. You know, so working to a plan is going to be the best way to set yourself up for success. It makes it the most productive way of doing it. It gives you then an idea that you've put a bit of effort into the way you're thinking about how the garden's going to work, because you're looking at setting up the different heights of the plant, so you're not hiding a small plant over the back, which is what's happened to me this year in my trial garden. It's been an absolute disgrace. I'm embarrassed by it.
That wasn't your fault, though. You didn't know the plants were going to get as tall as they did.
Oh,
no. They weren't meant to.
That was just the way that it worked out. It was just a real shocker.
Okay, so now the next that's a good segue onto the next one. Make sure to choose the right plants for the right conditions so they thrive rather than battling to survive and then have to be replaced.
Yep.
Like you're going to be replacing those tall ones.
Well, and the beauty about doing mine is it's a trial garden. So, you know, I get to test them so that I'm not going to be making those mistakes on my clients' gardens.
You wouldn't want to do that, would you?
Yeah, so you've got to plan the whole thing through properly. You know, think about the sorts of plants. And, you mentioned the fact that you've got to pick the right plants for the right conditions. And those right conditions are lots of things. It's not just necessarily a plant water requirement. It could be a shade requirement.
Absolutely.
Or it could be any number of things.
It's the climate.
You're in climate. Yeah, you can't go sticking certain plants in areas that you know, you get severe frost because they're not going to last.
Exactly. You know? Growing perennials rather than annuals is another way to save money, because annuals obviously only last 1 year and need to be replaced. If you choose a mix of perennials that flower at different times of the year, that gives the garden interest at all times.
Absolutely. It looks fantastic that way, you know, and you've got longevity. And I always go back to you know, perennials, because even if you just put a few in, you're going to have long-lasting flowering plants.
Yeah.
That, you know, are going to be flowering for, you know, 5, 6, 8 months of the year. You know,
year after year. Yeah. Using native plants also that are suited to your local environment is another good idea. They usually take less work to maintain. They require less water and they thrive better than other perennials. So they also provide food and shelter to animals.
Little native,
so getting the wildlife to come in as well.
Yeah. You get all the benefits from that. And they're a plant that really can look after itself, because they're used to the conditions that they're actually going to be growing in.
Mm.
So have a look at your indigenous plants for sure.
Great idea. Also, to shop for plants during the cooler months, because like with bare-rooted plants, they're so much cheaper than if you're buying an advanced plant, like a tree.
Yeah.
So autumn or winter is a good time to be shopping for plants as well.
And that takes a little bit of forward planning on your part, planting or planning, so that you know what sort of size of plant that it's going to be and get to.
Yeah.
But that's a great way. I mean, I buy most of my fruit trees, for instance, bare rooted in the middle of winter.
Yeah.
Because they're just so much cheaper and they take off so much quicker, providing you prune them back accordingly in the first year.
Which you'll teach us all about.
We'll teach you
all about. Constantly teach us all about. a good way to actually spend no money at all is to take cuttings as much as you can. So many plants can be divided, and by doing so, this helps prevent overcrowding and provides you with more plants for absolutely no cost at all. Things like hydrangeas, geraniums, irises, sedums. I mean, there's a massive list of plants that can be divided.
Most of the plants can. I mean, you know, even things like your ground covers, they're very easily divided. You know, your lamb's ears, they're so simple to break up and repot and gift.
Yes.
You know, it's a wonderful thing to be able to gift some plants to some friends that, you know, were...
And to swap
and
with
to
those
swap.
Friends as
exactly.
well. Exactly. They may have something that you don't have that you'd like. Seeds. Now, this is your seeds are your baby, really.
Oh, they are. I love them.
You love them. They are so much cheaper than buying seedlings or advanced plants. All you need are the seeds, some potting mix, a light source, some DIY seed pots like your wonderful pots. That's where you can. So, if you want to tell us about the seeds, tell us about your pots. How does it all work?
Well,
where do you buy them from? What's your best?
Well, I think about the sorts of plants that I'm going to be growing, and then I will think about who the best supplier is going to be. Now, if we're talking about things like vegetables, then, you know, there's a great company called The Seed Collection. They're just one off. But, you know, I can buy a packet of their seeds, and there might be 50 to 100 seeds in each packet. Mm. And then they're $2 to $3 each. Mm. Well, you know, you think about the value and what's a seed cost you for that, return that it gets on you.
Mm.
So the thing that you've got to do then, once you've got your seed, is think about the best way of getting the most value out of those seeds. And that is planting at the right time. So I always plant on the moon calendar. I buy the best possible potting mix that's available because, you know, you're going to be spending more on a quality product.
Yep.
And then I think about the cheapest way that I can get a pot, and there's nothing cheaper than a paper pot.
No.
And, you know, people can go back and or contact me and say, listen, how do you make a paper pot? And I'm very happy to share that with them.
You need to do a new video on that.
Yeah, we'll do a video on that as well, yeah.
So what sort of potting mix? So you don't use a seed saving mix?
No, I never use a seed raising mix. I think it's a seed raising mix is a step too far.
Okay.
You know,
don't need
like
it.
That old story, step
not
too far.
Okay.
No, there's no need. If you buy a quality potting mix and you plant the seed at the right depth, which is twice their width in depth, you keep it moist until germination's taken place, then all that goodness in that potting mix is there available for that seedling.
Okay.
Not like a seed raising mix, which is a very, very open mix that you've got to constantly water and attend to. And then once the plant gets up, there's nearly no goodness in that seed raising mix. So you've got to then pot it up into another pot.
Yep.
Whereas doing it the way we do it, into a quality potting mix to start with, bang, the job's done. It's just one process until it gets big enough, and then you plant the whole little seedling, the paper
pot
in the ground. You've sequestered carbon and you've not disturbed the root system on it one little bit.
Yep.
It's a great way of doing it.
And saving those seeds is another cost saving. Do you do that? Or?
Yeah, I do. And at the moment, I've got some beans, baby sunbeams, which I bought the seeds from Diggers. They're the only crowd that have this baby sunbeam, which is a basketball-sized plant that produces an incredible amount of beans. It's just amazing. Leslie's had to put them in the freezer. We got so many of these
Fantastic.
These little baby sunbeam.
Yeah.
So I've pulled out most of the plants. I probably had about 8 plants. I've pulled out 6, and I've left 2 of the healthiest looking plants just to produce more pods, which will they'll dry on the actual plant, and when the actual pods have gone this beautiful papery brown color and they're totally dry, I'll then open those up, put them onto a piece of paper. I can stick that piece of paper where the air is getting to it, a little bit of sunlight, and just ensure that those seeds have dried off totally.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can then put those into a little packet, the little silica gel packs that you get when you buy a new pair of shoes or a new handbag.
Yes.
I've got plenty of those.
Yes.
And you put that in there, and that just takes the humidity out of the paper bag. And then you put that paper bag into a plastic container and straight into the fridge, and that will last for 10, 15 years, that packet.
I was about to ask that, how long they'll last? 10, 15 years. Okay.
Yeah, I've got seeds in there that would be, you know, probably 8, 9 years old, and we get 100% strike rate still.
Wow.
And
amazing.
If you think about that, the perfect conditions for saving seeds is a constant temperature and a very, very low humid environment. And the pharaohs that had their great big tombs miles, you know, 100 metres down below the soil, they found seeds in there were 5,000 years old, took them out and they germinated.
Oh, wow.
So it's just incredible.
That is incredible. Okay. All right. Let's talk about these vegetables. If you're not already doing so, creating a food garden is a simple and effective way to both reduce your impact on the environment and to save you cash. I'm really looking forward to starting our new veggie garden out there, and we all know how much joy Keith gets from his. There is nothing better than eating fresh, pesticide-free vegetables that you've grown with your own hands.
Mm-hmm.
And a vegetable garden can be grown in a large garden bed, it can be grown in a container, it can be grown in so many conditions, as long as there's lots of sun. It doesn't matter how small or how large a space. So tell us all about growing vegetables, Keith, in a nutshell.
Yep. Well, if you've got soil, then all you need to do is improve that soil, and whether that's, you know, where you've currently got a tree or a shrub or something else, there's always a place in the garden that you can actually put a vegetable in. And sometimes that can look fantastic, you know, where you've got a normal garden set up with shrubs and little trees and so forth, providing that's getting enough sunlight, and we need, you know, probably 4 to 6 hours of sunlight, then that's a great space to actually put some good organic soil in there and put a seedling in and then just watch it grow.
Yeah.
You know, there's things like five-coloured silver beet, which look fantastic, growing in amongst, you know, the regular plants in your garden, you know, or the Tuscan kale looks absolutely sensational because it's got that wonderful structural look about the garden.
Mm.
But here at your place, you're lucky enough to have a great spot outside there, and you've got your raised beds from Modbox.
Modbox, thank you.
Which are all filled up.
Yes.
which would have been fun.
No, it wasn't fun, but we did it. And we're still sitting straight. We're okay. And we have to add the lignite humates yet, so I've got to do that. But yes, we're then got to think, well, what am I going to put in there?
Oh, well, I'm just down the road, so we'll be putting some extra seeds for you.
Very, very lucky. Okay, so now also when it comes to planting vegetables, it's important not to overplant, isn't it? Because if you overplant, it's a waste of precious food, and we don't want to do that.
That was something that you used to think about all the time. And you used to be very mindful about the size of the plant and the area it's got to grow in. Until I met an organic farmer who I said to him, I'm about to put some cauliflowers in, but I hate those great big heads of cauliflower because you cut it in half and you'll use half of it. And then you'll throw the other half out, you know, a few days later because you forgot it where it is. So all he said to me was, plant your cauliflowers close together, and therefore that means that the plant's competing for space, so it's not going to produce the same size big head. It'll produce a small head, which is just perfect for what we want. So they've
got to be like
pushed in fairly close.
Close together. Okay.
You know, I mean, if you're talking about a normal cauliflower, will take up probably around about 50 centimeter diameter. Okay. Well, if you planted two in that particular space, so 25 centimetres apart, then you're only going to get smaller heads on your actual cauliflowers. And the same applies to all of those sorts of vegetables.
What a great tip. Thank you very much. You know, I remember
that. It's commercial. You know,
we've all got that. Yeah. That's a fantastic tip. Okay. All right, moving on. I was also actually going to say about preserving, because that's something else you can do if you've got too much.
Yeah, and we do
a lot of that, yeah.
We're about to start doing passata, so we've got a mile of tomatoes.
Yum.
But we've already dried some. We never got to try any of those. I've got a particular son that has a particular liking for our dried tomatoes, so he's got both lots of that so far.
Oh,
but they'll come on, and we'll dry those tomatoes. We'll season them. We'll put them in bottles with oil. Good quality olive oil, and then we've got them all year round.
Yeah.
And the same applies to so many things. You can blanch excess vegetables, freeze them, you know, and away you go.
Mm.
So even bottling, you know, you can bottle things. I mean, even your husband Brett's come up with a bottling for some
cucumbers, some beautiful cucumbers that you gave us.
Yeah, millions of cucumbers that I handed your way.
He did well. Delicious. You did a great job with that.
Fantastic.
All right, we could talk about that forever, but we can't. We've got to move on. Next week's podcast, funnily enough, concentrates on alternatives to a traditional lawn.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lush green and weed-free lawn looks fantastic, but it does require a lot of water, fertilizer, and time to keep it looking good. So you can have a much more sustainable landscape by reducing the area planted in grass and replace it with ornamental grasses, low-growing shrubs, or ground covers.
Mm-hmm.
So find out more on next week's podcast.
About that.
What do you want to say about that? Wait till next week.
Wait till next week, yeah. I think that's probably the best thing to do.
Maybe you've got to listen to next week as well. All right.
There's something I'd like to just bring up.
Oh.
Because it's something that I've noticed that really affects how I buy things.
Yeah.
I went to the Big Green Warehouse to purchase some herbicide, some stuff that I want to kill some weeds with, and I found that the product that I wanted was no longer available. And when I had a good look around and I spoke to one of the girls who was working there, she said to me, this is their new push now. So they're pushing away from buying bulk product that you dilute down yourself and use with sprayers, and they're pushing you to RTUs, which is ready-to-use sprays. Now, those sprays you can reuse, providing you've got bulk chemical, but you haven't got bulk chemical anymore.
Yeah, no.
So those things then go into the landfill, or they're going to go into whatever recycling bin. So what I had to do then was to get online and have a look at that product that I was looking for and find another source. So Bunnings have lost me in that respect.
Oh, so Bunnings are doing this. It's Bunnings not as though the company's doing that.
And I've sent them an email, and the department's come back and said, well we're going to get onto this, and I've never heard another thing coming since then. So it's a real knock in the head to the way that people want to do things.
Yeah.
We're losing choices, and that really annoys the hell out of me.
So you bought the product online.
I put the order in on the Monday, and I had the product that I wanted by Wednesday.
Fantastic.
And it came from Queensland.
Okay. Will we discuss what product that was or not?
Yeah, it was a product called OCP, one of their OCP slashes.
Right.
So it's an organic herbicide.
Oh, that is.
But they're just pushing you all the time into these stupid little sprays, you know, that they're getting greater problems. It's all about money.
Yeah. And we're supposed to be looking after our environment. This is exactly what we're talking about right now, how to be more sustainable and how to be more environmentally friendly.
And that's why I wanted to bring that up.
Good old Bunnings. Sorry.
That's why I wanted to bring that up. You know, you've got to do the best thing for you in terms of the dollar that you've got to spend rather than have someone else make those choices for you.
The environment as well.
Yeah, and the environment.
Yeah. Okay, moving on. Planting a shade tree or shrub can help to reduce energy costs as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to help to keep the house cool in summer, and if it's a deciduous tree, it can also let the sun in during winter, which could potentially reduce winter heating costs as well. We are really feeling the heat in our house this summer because we have absolutely no trees because we got rid of them all, and I cannot wait to get planting again because it's bloody hot in here. Not today, but it has been.
Yeah, and that's just it. That's just the environment that, you know, unfortunately we've got.
Mm.
And the more plants you have, the cooler the environment's going to be. And it's not just shade trees. It's having, you know,
greenery.
That's what, you know, that creates a micro-environment that just makes things so much more pleasant to be part of.
Exactly. Well, we could go on and on and on, but these are just a few ideas that can be actioned towards a well-planned and sustainable garden, which will last for years with little cost and less maintenance. Choosing plants wisely, shopping at the right place and time, and using some ingenuity can save you money without sacrificing any of your gardening goals. Thank you for listening to Muddy Boots. For more information on today's podcast, please go to muddyboots.net.au, and happy gardening.